אם בחוקותיי תלכו, ואת מצוותיי תשמרו, ועשיתם אותם. ונתתי גשמיכם בעיתם, ונתנה הארץ יבולה, ועץ השדה ייתן פריו, והשיג לכם דיש את בציר, ובציר ישיג את זרעה. ואכלתם לחמכם לשובע, וישבתם לבטח בארצכם.
Hello, I hope I haven't kept you waiting. Come right over. By the window. Comfortable?
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Bechukotai, which we are reading here in Israel by itself, and Chutz La'aretz is finally catching up to us by reading Bahar, which we read last week, and Bechukotai as the double sedra it was intended to be this year, so that we are now back in sync, officially starting next Shabbat with Parshat Bamidbar pre-Shavuot. So we've been out of sync for about 6 weeks, and we're coming back together. So this show, here in Israel, for Parshat Bechukotai, also for Yom Yerushalayim, which is Motzoi Shabbat and Sunday. But today, first recording and first broadcast, Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the 25th day of Iyar 5772. Excuse me, last night we counted 40 days in the Omer, which is 5 weeks and 5 days, and it's May 17th on the secular calendar. I think that about covers it. Parshat Bechukotai, this Shabbat, is Mevorchim Chodesh Sivan. So we, as well as Jews all over the world, will announce that Rosh Chodesh Sivan will be Yom Shilishi next Tuesday, corresponding to the 22nd of May, and that will begin the month of Sivan. Iyar has only 29 days, and its 29th day is Monday. When that happens, the following month has a single day, Rosh Chodesh, as Sivan does. So I think we're up to date on the calendar. A word of explanation, not on the opening theme. It was a very short piece, but I challenge you to get it and get the connection. I would like to give a yasher koach to M.G. from Rochester, New York, or maybe I could say his name, Mark Gantrow, and whatever family members contribute to the think tank. But last week we started with the theme from 30-something, followed by the hello, hello, hello of the Three Stooges. Combining them, we get 33, which was Lag BaOmer, which was last Thursday when we were recording the show. So Kol HaKavod, Mark, and for anyone else who got it, even if you did not decide to tell me about it. The funniest thing was, somebody sent an email which said 30-something and hello, 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 the Three Stooges. So I suspected that he might have gotten that, but not the connection to Lag BaOmer, and I wrote back to him saying, and? Question mark. And he sees me the other day, and he says, I got this email from you, and all it said was, and, with a question mark. What is that supposed to mean? I said, you recognize 30-something, you recognize the Three Stooges. Why did I choose those two little clips to start last week's show? He had no idea. I told him Lag BaOmer, so now I know. So, that's the way it works sometimes, and we'll see who catches this very brief opener. about the first verses. I usually read only the first pasuk, the first verse of the weekly Sedra. This time I decided to read the first three, which say the following: If you will follow my decrees and observe my commandments and perform them, then I will provide your rains in their time, and the land will give its produce, and the tree of the field will give its fruit. Your threshing floor, your threshing, will last until your vintage, and your vintage will last until the sowing. You will eat your bread to satiety, however you pronounce that, and you will dwell securely in your land. Now, what we had last week, you know what? I'll tell you this after Tehillim. Kuf Lamed, Psalm 130. Let's say that now and then pick up where it just dropped off. Shir Hama'alot Mima'amakim Kraticha Adonai. Adonai Shimavakoli Tihiena Aznecha Kashuvot Lakol Tachanunai. Imavonot Tishmorya Adonai Miya Amod Ki Imacha Hasilicha Lema'an Tivare. Kiviti Adonai Kivita Nafshi Velidvaro Hochalti. Nafshi L'Adonai Mishomerim Laboker Shomerim Laboker. Yachel Yisrael El Adonai Ki Im Adonai Hachesed V'Harbe Imo Fedut. V'Hu Yifde Et Yisrael Mikol Avonotav. Achenu Kol Beit Yisrael Hanetunim Batzara Uvashivya Ha'omedim Bein Bayam Ubein Vayavasha Hamakom Yerachem Aleihem V'Yotzieim Mitzara Lirvacha U'Me'afela La'ora ומשיבוד לגאולה, השתה בעגלה ובזמן קריב, ונאמר אמן. Had a mispronunciation there of the word ובין, ובין. The dot dropped out, and I accidentally put it back in. So, that's the way it works. Okay. I just said about the beginning of Bechukotai. Let me go back a step. Last week, and for people in Chutz Laaretz outside of Israel, it's the beginning of this week's reading, we have various promises that if we keep mitzvot, God will bless us with good things. And we do not have in Bahar the downside, the negative. But if you don't listen, then you're really in trouble. That's what Bechukotai has. And I was glad, and I wrote about it, that we in Israel separated Bahar and Bechukotai this year, as is done in any 13-month year, not this year. That was a difference between Israel's procedure and Chutz Laaretz. The point is, Bahar and Bechukotai are often joined, and sometimes they are separated. When they are separated, you get to make the observation that you have first God's promises of good, and then, after a break of a week, so to speak, or one sedra to the next, you have a reiteration of some of those promises, followed by a very harsh, depressing, what happens if we don't follow God's law. But Bechukotai starts out the same way Bahar was. If you follow the mitzvot, then good things will happen. Among the specifics here are not for the individual, but for the nation, which of course affects each individual, and that is good produce, good economics, and peace in the land. You will be able to dwell in peace, at peace. So that's pretty much the story of the beginning of Bechukotai. A lot of nice promises, and then, unfortunately, the Torah has to switch mood. V'im lo tishma'uli, but if you don't listen to me, v'lo ta'asu, and you will not do, et kol ha-mitzvot ha'ele, all of these mitzvot, im bechukotai tim'asu, if you will treat my statutes as loathsome, Ve'im et mishpatai tig'al nafshechem, you'll be disgusted with my statutes, my rules, my laws. Levilti asot et kol mitzvotai, by not doing mitzvot, lahafrechem et briti, and abrogating my covenant with you. You do that, I will act in kind. And it proceeds in very graphic terms of all the things that are prophesied for the nation of Israel when, let's say if and when, they do not follow the Torah. It's very, very straightforward in that respect, because we have a deal. It's not God took us out of Egypt, do whatever you want. It's God took us out of Egypt, gave us the Torah, and brought us to Eretz Yisrael, the land of Israel. And that it was a plan. There were purpose to that. And we have to keep our part of the deal, which we have committed ourselves to from the beginning. But then that was as a nation, and it's up to each individual to take the challenge seriously and to make a personal commitment to keep Torah and mitzvot. I would like to discuss two different mitzvot that we find towards the end of the book of Vayikra, towards the end of Parshat Bechukotai. Before that, I just want to make a final comment for now about the tochacha, the reproach. Throughout the Torah, we are made aware over and over again of the deal and the plan of God. Right up front, I've said this many times, at the burning bush, the first encounter between God and Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses, God says to Moshe, I heard the people, I hear the people, I remember my promises to their forefathers. I will go down into the land of Egypt to take the people out and bring them to the land flowing with milk and honey, Eretz Yisrael. The first, maybe not the first, but God sends Moshe to the people, and he says, tell them, I am God, I will take you out of Egypt, I will save you from Egypt, I will redeem you from Egypt, I will take you unto me as a nation, I will be your God, I will bring you to the land which I promised to your forefathers, and I will give you that land as a heritage. I am God. That sets the tone for this theme that runs throughout the Torah. Namely, that by virtue of God's taking us out of Egypt and giving us the Torah to be lived in the land of Israel, or anywhere, wherever we find ourselves, that comes with a commitment on our part that we accept this offer. Accepting the offer of freedom from Egypt was done by that generation. Every generation, every individual throughout the history of the Jewish people is in a position to accept the offer of the Torah or reject it. But God's plan is to give us the Torah to live by. And therefore, from a, I don't even know what you want to call it, a basic view of Judaism, Judaism is meant to be practiced by Jews and understood and taught to their children, to the next generation, to be enjoyed, but that the Torah and its mitzvot are meant to be followed. Can you be Jewish without doing mitzvot? Yes. Can you be a observe, no, I don't want to get into trouble here. Can you, you know what? I'm not going to go any further. I'll make the statement in a positive way. All Jews should study the Torah, learn about the Torah, keep its mitzvot. Whatever else there is already part of that. And this I mentioned last week. I don't even have to add and be nice to each other, because being nice to each other is part of the Torah. So it's not do the mitzvot and be a good person, because the mitzvot include be a good person. A good person and a good Jew. And when we don't keep that, there are national consequences and there are individual consequences. Let's leave it at that for the moment. I want to now a total switch from a broad overview kind of mitzvah to a specific kind. And hear me out, because the beginning of the presentation, if you take it too narrowly, is not what everybody wants to study. I'm talking about temple service, sacrifices in the time of the temple. Here's the case. You own a sheep. That sheep is yours. You can't abuse it, but you can certainly use it and benefit from it. You can shear its wool and make yarn and make all kind of goods and sell them, or clothe yourself. If it's a female, you can use its milk and make cheese and make butter and other things like that from it and profit from it. And ultimately, if it's properly slaughtered by the rules of Shechita, you can feed yourself and others. That's what the sheep is for. If, in the time of the Beit HaMikdash, you say, this sheep shall be a sacrifice to God, then you have consecrated it, and it is no longer free to you to do whatever you want to do. Before you open your mouth, the sheep was a regular sheep. By your power of speech, you have made the animal holy, and to use it, one thread of its wool, would be an act of sacrilege. It's like stealing from God, because you, with your mouth and your words, your power of speech, consecrated the animal to God. There are many, many details to this. Don't want to get involved in them now, because it's still not the point that I want to bring up. This animal that you have designated as a sacrifice will have to be brought the next time you go to Yerushalayim, to the Beit HaMikdash, and offered as whichever korban it was designated to be. Let's say you've got it in a pen, and a ribbon is tied around its neck, reminding everyone that you're not allowed to derive any benefit from it. It's already consecrated as a sacrifice. You do a little calculation and you find that you've got too many goats and not enough sheep. And a goat is also appropriate for the Beit HaMikdash. It is fit for the altar. And you take this beautiful goat and you say, may the sanctity that was placed by me on this sheep be transferred to the goat instead, and the sheep should no longer be sacred. This kind of thing works, not in this case of the sheep and the goat, but it does work in other things which we are familiar with. Just to briefly mention Ma'aser Sheni It's part of the produce, which is holy, and we have to bring it to Yerushalayim and eat it in Yerushalayim. If it's too much and we want to redeem it, the money which we redeem the Maaser Sheni with becomes sacred and has to be brought to Yerushalayim and spent on food and drink there, here. Nice say. And the produce is now profane, secular. It is no longer Kodesh. A firstborn male child, a firstborn child, if he's male, has a certain sanctity to it, to him, and the parents must redeem him. So there is a concept in different other areas of, other different areas of Judaism, where there is the ability to switch status from one item to another. Therefore, I might think that here is an example which will work. I have an animal that is sacred because I deemed it so, and I want to change my mind and I want to switch the sanctity from this sheep to this goat, and the goat is worth more than the sheep, let's say. It doesn't work. You cannot redeem or exchange a sacred animal that is fit for the altar for anything else. It was designated to be a sacrifice. That's what has to happen. The attempt to switch goes under the title called Timura. Timura. Timura is switching the sanctity, which you can't do, so it means attempting to switch the sanctity. Furthermore, the Torah says, got a word for you. Not only did the sheep not lose its sanctity by your attempt at switching its sanctity with this goat, the goat becomes sacred also. V'hayahu utmurato kodesh l'Hashem. It, the animal in question, and the one you tried to exchange it with, are both sacred. And you violated the Torah by attempting, and you could be liable to the punishment of makot, which is whipping in court, when we have the whole infrastructure of Sanhedrin, which is not exactly the same as at the time of the Beit HaMikdash, but they go hand in hand. At least when the Beit HaMikdash stands, there certainly is a Sanhedrin. We'll pick up more on this. Hold that thought. We'll be right back with Torah Tidbits Audio. You are listening to Torah Tidbits Audio for Parshat Bechukotai and for Yerushalayim. In fact, the opening music of this half was the beautiful beginning of the song Vil Yerushalayim by Eitan Katz. I will play the rest of the song shortly. There are a lot of songs with Yerushalayim as a theme, and this is one of the beauties. But before we do that, I want to finish up on the mitzvah we were talking about. It's called Timura. It's a prohibition. I think it's a fairly rare kind of prohibition where nothing is accomplished. There is no act and nothing is done, but the sin happens. Usually, in order to sin, you need a forbidden act. So if a person takes meat and sautés it in butter, intending to violate the Torah's prohibition of cooking milk and meat together, he's spiteful, angry, whatever, and he's doing it on purpose. And Shlemiel or Shlemazel that he is, he notices that he didn't take the butter after all, but he took par of margarine. Whatever you want to think of such a person, and whatever personal din v'cheshbon, accounting he will have to give to God, he did not violate the prohibition of cooking milk and meat together, because he didn't cook milk and meat together. His intention does not make it a sin. The act would make it a sin. And many, many other examples like that. All of a sudden, we come across Timura, where his intention is to remove the sanctity from this animal, the sheep, and exchange it by making the goat sacred instead of the sheep. An exchange, a redemption, call it what you want. He does not accomplish that. He cannot take the sanctity off of that sheep. So he tried to, but he didn't succeed. That's still the sin. And what's further unusual about it is he's subject to makot. Makot, which usually goes only for an act of violation. Here, there was no act of violation. It was a verbal declaration. And it didn't accomplish anything. And furthermore, he's penalized by the goat becoming kodesh also. Very unusual. I want to move to another mitzvah at the end of Bechukotai, and we'll talk about that, and then we'll get, Mirtz Hashem, to the topic of Yom Yerushalayim. But before that, let's hear Eitan Katz with Vil Yerushalayim. And we'll let you hear the musical introduction again. The words to this song come from the daily Amidah, the daily service of prayer, in the blessing called Vil Yerushalayim. In English translation from the Koran Siddur, to Jerusalem, your city, may you return in compassion, and may you dwell in it as you promised. May you rebuild it rapidly in our days as an everlasting structure, and install within it soon the throne of David. The blessing concludes, blessed are you, Hashem, who builds Jerusalem. Eitan Katz.
Going with all your heart. asher divarta.
Yoyoy vechi yisei David avdecho. Yoyoy meheiro leso yechotochi. Yoyoy vechi yisei David avdecho. Yoyoy meheiro leso yechotochi.
Okay, we'll be back shortly to talk about Yom Yerushalayim and relate it to the song. But before that, one last mitzvah from Parshat Bechukotai, the mitzvah of Ma'aser Behema. I have a long introduction, which I'll skip. Let me start from the mitzvah. A person owns sheep, goats, and or cows. Let's make it simple, a sheep farmer, a sheep herder, whatever it's called. He owns sheep, and he has shepherds which he hires, whom he hires, and he has his flocks in different parts of the country, and he gets his reports from the field. And at a certain time of the year, when this mitzvah is supposed to be performed, he has a record that he has 29 newborn lambs in this past year. The mitzvah is to gather the 29 lambs together in a pen, an enclosure, with a very narrow opening that only one lamb can walk through at a time. He takes a mother sheep outside the opening, and she bleats and baas, and the lambs respond by walking through the opening in the enclosure. The owner counts them, cannot coax them as to which one should go through next. However they go through the opening, that's the rule. And he counts 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And the 10th one that passes under his gaze, his shepherd's crook, he declares Kodesh, sacred. He marks the animal with a ribbon around its neck, with a dab of a certain color paint on its tail, and that animal is now sacred. It is called Ma'aser Behema, the tithe of the animal. He continues counting. 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19. The 20th one, 20th, that passes through, he declares Kodesh sacred. There are only 9 left. There is not enough for Ma'aser. It does not go proportional. Gets rounded down. And he now has 2 lambs designated as Ma'aser, with a status of sanctity, and they must be brought by the owner to Jerusalem to offer as a sacrifice in the Beit HaMikdash, called Ma'aser, and most of the meat gets returned to him after the offering of the Korban to eat in Yerushalayim for the rest of that day, for that night, and the following day, in a state of ritual purity, with his family, with invited friends, and that is the mitzvah called Ma'aser Behema. Here's the unusual thing about it, and I'll try not to belabor it, because I do want to get to talk about the Six-Day War and about Yerushalayim. If the farmer, the sheep owner, does not do what I just described, then he has missed the opportunity to do a mitzvah, but there are no consequences. I don't mean in his spiritual accounting with God. I'm talking about practical, on the field, on the ground consequences. There are none. In other words, he has 29 newborns. They have not been gathered together, and they have not been counted out in that way that I described. There is no Ma'aser Behema. The mitzvah wasn't done. No animal is sacred. All of the animals are permitted. It's not like produce, that if you don't separate Trumot and Ma'aserot from them, then the food remains forbidden to eat. Very serious violation called Tevel. In Ma'aser Behema, it doesn't work like that. In fact, if he has 9 newborns born in one place and 9 in another, he's under no obligation to bring them together in order to do the mitzvah, but he should. And therefore, the reason I'm bringing this up, is we have an example of a mitzvah that is available to perform, that should be performed, that is easy to avoid, that has no negative consequences if one avoids it, and therefore it's almost like a voluntary kind of mitzvah. It's an obligation, but it's less than that, which makes it more than that. Because if I were a grape grower, then I would have to, because of the terrible consequence, financially, I'd have to take Trumot and Ma'aserot whether I wanted to or not. Because I'm hoping to sell my grapes to the local winery, which produces kosher wine. And if I don't have a certificate that my field, my yield of the field was properly separated from the Trumot and Ma'aserot, then all of my grapes become forbidden to eat. And if I don't care about it, it doesn't matter. I'm not going to be able to sell it in the market. I'm not going to be able to sell it to a winery. In Ma'aser, so that's a mitzvah that I would do for business purposes, even if I didn't feel like doing it for religious reasons. Ma'aser Behema has no financial negative. In fact, I gain the value of a lamb or two, or however many, and I'll be able to profit from them. And I don't have to prove anything. I don't have to demonstrate anything. I don't have to bring any kind of certificate. Voluntary kind of mitzvah. One last thing to say about it. This mitzvah applies today, but the Shulchan Aruch says don't do it. And that's ironic. and that's poignant. Shulchan Aruch is the book of Jewish law, which among many other books is teaching us how to do mitzvot. And here's an example where they have to teach us not to do a mitzvah, because it would create the complication of not being able to derive any benefit from these animals, and we don't have a Beit HaMikdash to bring them and offer them as a korban. Enough said for the moment. I want to finish up with talking a little bit about Yerushalayim, Yom Yerushalayim, and the Six-Day War. Everyone knows that in 1967, Israel was savagely threatened and attacked by its Arab neighbors with the goal of driving the Jews into the sea, taking over and destroying Israel. By the grace of God, using the vehicle of a superbly trained and prepared army, Israel had a miraculous victory in the short period of time of 6 days. I can't get out of my mind, the first thing that always comes to my mind is the story of the Egyptian Air Force. Israel destroyed, on the first day of the war, if I remember correctly, the entire Egyptian Air Force. Not a single plane left the ground. Pilots who were supposed to be on 24-hour alert were caught away from their planes and cafeterias having coffee, and others were ill-prepared to fly their planes. Not an Egyptian plane got off the ground. We had trouble with Syrian planes, but not with Egypt. And that knocking out of the southern front was a very strategic move for the way the rest of the war went. Don't want to go into the whole thing. On the third day of the war, Jerusalem was reunited. And subsequently, and I don't know exactly who made the decision and exactly when it was made, but the celebration of the victory of the Six-Day War was focused on the reunification of Jerusalem, and that date, which corresponded to the 28th of Iyar in 1967, 5737, became Yom Yerushalayim, Jerusalem Day, sometimes called Yom Shichrur Yerushalayim, a day that religiously is celebrated by many Jews in Israel and elsewhere as a festival, a sort of festival, with the saying of the festive psalms in the morning prayer, and the Hallel afterwards, and various and other ways of festivalizing, we'll say, the prayer service, both at night and at daytime. Nationally, it is celebrated by ceremonies, especially a closing ceremony at Givat HaTachmoshet, Ammunition Hill, which was a key spot in the victory. One other thing to throw into the picture for those who are not aware of this is that Israel told Jordan, they had Syria in the north, Egypt in the south, and Jordan in the east, and the Mediterranean in the west. Jordan was told by Israel, stay out of this war and we won't touch you. Jordan had no choice because of treaties they had made with Syria and Egypt, and they became the big losers. They came in, Israel conquered, recaptured all of the territory that was being held by Jordan, the parts of Eretz Yisrael, including the old city of Jerusalem, including the city of Hebron, and many, many other locations. I don't know if this is the only point, and I'm running out of time, but I want to mention this also. I said before, by the grace of God and through the vehicle of Tzahal, you have part of the Israeli population who are so gung-ho on look what the army can do that they feel a little protective and jealous if you mention God and thank Him for the victory. What do you mean, Him? It was Tzahal. You have other people who protect God's reputation, so to speak, by downplaying the army in this and say this was a miracle of God. Neither contradicts the other. The way that one should look at this is it was a miracle by God via a military victory, and we've had those before in history, and they combine to our saying, Zeh Hayom Aso Hashem, Nagila V'Nismachavo, this is a day that God made, and we will rejoice in it. On that note, I wish you a Shabbat Shalom, Yom Yerushalayim Sameach, L'Hishtameach.